Yeah, go for it.
Oh, I was gonna, not gonna do it. Okay, here's the quote. No sooner does man become the creator of the drama of his dream state through the projection of his own dormant impressions, than this very projection of his own dormant impressions reflects his past as if it were his present. And man, finding himself involved in this drama, gets absorbed in his past while still maintaining it to be his present. I'd like to read that one more time because it's very twisty. No sooner does man become the creator of the drama of his dream state through the projection of his own dormant impressions, then this very projection of his own dormant impressions reflects his past as if it were his present. And man, finding himself involved in this drama, gets absorbed in his past while still maintaining it to be his present. This is a good description of sleep, and it shows our donkeyness.
And that is from where, Teresa? Where is that quotation from?
Meher Baba.
I see. Thank you.
Thank you.
So you're saying, can I say something? You're
Yeah?
saying that the present always the past in that statement.
I'm sorry, there was phone noise. Can you please say, ask your question again?
The present is always the past in that statement.
No, he says no sooner does man become the creator of the drama of his dream state. So if we're in our phenomenal self, the historic personality, we're creating a drama through the dream state by projecting our dormant impressions. We're taking that mechanicality and the impressions associated with them, and we're projecting them out there into the world and recreating the past by doing that. If we're in the non-phenomenal self, we're not creating, projecting dormant impressions and creating a dream state.
So, like a create recreating the cross, in a sense, is doing the same thing.
Is doing what same thing?
It could be, Leona. It could be, yes.
Townsie Girl said, "Oh, I think I get that. The trivia that encourages our sleep is the dreaming drama." Very nice. Very nice tight rendition there. The trivia that encourages our sleep is the dreaming drama.
In this moment of silence, I want to encourage everybody to, from time to time, if you can, during the week, during between classes, go to the website. Go to the website, the PWAS website, and post a comment or two. And what is that website name again, please?
PositiveEnergyGuide.com slash PWOS, Practical Work on Self. PositiveEnergyGuide.com slash PWOS. Now, Mark Roach added, well, the present is the past to the person doing it because they're constantly reactivating the historical self and mistaking it for the present.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Good.
And in keeping, David, with your suggestion that we post comments, I'd like to invite everybody between now and when the course is over to post any comments that I'd like to make a place on the website where we can post our feelings about being in the class, maybe what we gained for it, almost like little testimonials or something, just to inspire people to to listen to the transcripts of the course if they would like to become involved and we're not doing the course. For instance, if we're doing HBM, the Human Biological Machine, after Practical Work on Self, and someone would like to take on both courses, they can certainly do that online. And it might be nice if we had some comments that inspired people to dive into the material, especially because before the group had really formed and when we were just getting off to a start, those first few courses are not quite as inspiring as they became after we got more involved in it. So if any of you have comments like that, then please email them to me.
Okay.
So shall we move into our next chapter for the evening, donkeys?
Yeah, well, just briefly, if there are no more questions about chapter 16, then we can venture into chapter 17.
I don't see any. And chapter 17 is Chief Weakness. We must see what we ought to do and know the weakness which makes us unable to do it. This weakness is called Chief Feature. We usually think of this weakness as the best and nicest part of ourselves.
I refer you to the comments under chapter 17, and they're very provocative, and it's well worth reading. I think, I'm not sure, they're a bit lengthy, and but they're worth reading as part of your work in the next couple of weeks or so. I appreciate reading them myself. But for the moment, maybe we can just, we'll take on what we have in front of us.
David, if you want, I have in front of me that comment, and I could read just the two excerpts that have to do with where the way the paragraphs initially were written, if you want.
My initial feeling is that it's up to you. You can read it if you'd like, or we can just, it can be study for people as they study the material, as a just additional material for them to study.
I would like to include them. Suppose you read paragraph 1. I will read paragraph 1 here. Then you read paragraph 2. I will read paragraph 2 here, and then you can go on from there.
Okay, very good. So I'm reading from the book, Practical Work on Self, in its popular publication. Every small effort to awaken the machine is a small act toward eventual development of the will of the non-phenomenal self over the will of the machine. That's paragraph 1.
Okay. The first paragraph in this chapter from the 1979 edition of Volume 2 reads as follows. Chief feature is to assume that one is already what one could someday learn to be. It is the imaginary result of life, substituting for the reality of one's actual nothingness, the culmination of personality as if it were something genuinely attained. One factor by which we can recognize chief feature is that it requires no effort at all to develop it and no special effort to maintain its quality.
Yeah, and we see that in paragraph 3 here, that last part of it, T.
Okay.
So paragraph 2 is to really suffer, and here's the phrase that we've heard before, intentional purgatory, we must see what we ought to do and know the weakness of the machine which makes us unable to do what we should do. This inherent flaw in the machine we can call our chief weakness. We usually think of this weakness as the best and nicest part of ourselves. The chief weakness is the only one, is only one of the many destructive results of having lived our lives immersed in helpless identification with the sleeping machine.
And the second paragraph in this text would have been, man the machine can do nothing as a source of force. Everything of which he believes himself to be the causing factor in reality just happens by itself. For him to be able to do so, he must understand and learn to apply himself and his world, the law, of the inner octaves, and to be able to activate real will at those crossroads of possibility, which are open to him by applying shocks from his centrum of gravity toward the outer world.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different material there. A lot of different material.
I think you might have to be Silverdale to understand it too. And I'm not completely sure why it was important to you to contrast the two first two chapters of these two works. Can you tell us what your intention was in that contrast? What stood out for you as being important?
Well, you know, the reason I wanted to include the first paragraph is because although this chapter has to do with chief feature, nowhere in this chapter does it define for somebody who's reading it perhaps for the first time what is chief feature. And yet in this original edition from 1979, the first paragraph defines chief feature right away. So it's, you know, we are a product of conditioning. That is our chief feature. And as a product of our conditioning, we are involuntary slaves to life. If that is the case, how do we escape this situation? Well, you have to learn how to develop your non-phenomenal self in order to bring balance to that in state of involuntary slavery.
And when we are locked into the sleeping machine, we have no perspective whatsoever. Only when there's the beginnings of the essential self, the non-phenomenal self, suddenly we have the ability to have perspective. Then something's possible. But from within the problem itself, there's nothing we can do. Nothing. We're unable to do anything at that point. So there has to be a fulcrum outside it. And I call that fulcrum the essential self or the non-phenomenal self.
And actually, Teresa, that is what that second paragraph, I kind of put that in as an afterthought. Well, heck, here in this second paragraph is the answer to how our condition of involuntary slavery can be modified by an awareness of the inner octave of the non-phenomenal self within ourselves. But as David has just said, you have to have some perspective to be aware that that's even possible and accessible to us.
We even have tools.
Right.
So as Susan was telling us earlier, she's beginning to get this sense of the being in the sleeping machine, and my God, how pervasive it is.
Mark Rose wanted you to say again the comment that you just made before that. I wanted to let you know before you might forget.
Did that have anything to do with paper products? Possibly not.
About the fulcrum. And Townsend Girl wants that too. So does Khufu.
The idea is that, and then this actually answers Townsend Girl's question about how, as we understand our machine better, we feel more separate from the rest of humanity. It's true. But as we go about our normal life, and actually I'm going to bring in a couple of other points about this. As we go about our normal life, and as if we are locked in the sleeping machine, there's nothing within that context that can help us get out of it. Now, granted, there are occasional shocks, accidents, what have you. So we can't see from within it how to get out of it. Makes sense, because all we have from within it are the tools from within it. Right? Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So you can't work out the problem from within the problem, because you don't have the solution from in that framework.
Because the problem itself, the sleeping machine, what's its duty? To survive, to maintain itself in all the possibilities. But suddenly, maybe we have a starting to begin the sense of the essential self. If we have the essential self, then we can see that the sleeping machine is, in fact, the sleeping machine, and it's only one component of us. And it's standing in the place of the awakened machine that we have a lever that can help us begin to develop, as it's called here, intentionally develop the will of the essential self or the non-phenomenal self. We then have the ability to exercise our intentionality in a way that we didn't have before, which can strengthen the essential self, and as it becomes a normal, everyday part of ourselves, then the interplay between the sleeping machine and the historical personality and the essential self becomes a different dance, and some other things are possible. I don't know if that answered.
I think you did a great job there, David.
Okay.
Go ahead. Spit it out there. The owner?
As you're talking about, all of you have been talking about it, I'm getting a sense of, like, the total, complete freedom of letting go of, like, the simple message of letting go of what you think is your reason or your being or your whatever that you're projecting out into the world that come from, comes from from your ancestors, comes from, it's passed down, like, and all of a sudden you're here in the world trying to project an image that, or project a being that is, supposedly doing something in the world. Totally let it go. Like, totally let that go. There's a total freedom in that. For me, I'm talking.
There's also a freedom to living it exactly the way it is with another part of you present that doesn't judge it or resist it.
True. Totally true.
Every small effort to awaken the machine is a small act toward the eventual development of the will of the non-phenomenal self over the will of the machine. So the will of the machine is present most of the time. Most of the time. When we awaken, when we walk through that door, Susan, at that moment, the will of the machine falls away for a moment. And something else is there. It's the something else that is such a nice concept to begin. It's it's wonderful to begin embracing it and to live in it. That's all. It really is. And then you really stand in a different land, and you know you're there. You know you're there. There's a, it's kind of a different kind of confidence of, you don't need to prove it to anybody. You're just there. It's just the sense of being arises in you, and you're home in a certain way. We don't quite feel at home in the sleeping machine because it's not complete. That's why. this is kind of a bruiser of a chapter. I mean, there's a lot here, but I wanted to throw something out, and I'm barely making it to paragraph number 2. It says, we see what we ought to do. We know the weakness of the machine, which makes us unable to do what we should do. This inherent flaw can be called our chief weakness. Not chief weakness, our chief weakness. We usually think of the weakness as the best and nicest part of ourselves. So this is very personal, right? This is talking about a chief weakness that is in each of us particularly that we have to address with. Something happens, and it's called this inherent, it's what makes us unable to do what we should do.
Is there, can I ask a question? Is there, because of what I was hearing, is that weakness in us is what we totally love and want to project into the world?
You bet. Usually that's the case.
So it's not a weak, in that sense, we don't, like the machine doesn't see it as a weakness.
Oh, no, the machine definitely does not see it as a weakness. As you said, the machine wants to project it into the world and wants to consider it, hey, I'm the guy you're talking to. That's who I am. And we're looking at, so the in a nutshell, in a sense, the chapter is introducing us to this concept that maybe there's something unique to each, to me and to you, that is your particular chief weakness. Now, I'm going to bring in another idea about this that may or may not work, but I'm going to just throw it out there and see what the heck happens. Now,
no earthquakes.
That this guy here was put into this thing, right? I wasn't put into another thing, a different one. I'm in this one. And it has its inherent chief weaknesses. It has an inherent flaw. And how then do I interplay with that? What happens? What is my situation here? What situation do I find myself in? I find myself in a situation where it's almost as if I have, as I understand the chief weakness, I have found a worthy adversary. Yeah?
Worthy adversary.
So David, if you bring it into the practical way, without talking to anybody in particular, could you give us an example of anyone or somebody who doesn't know names or anything of a chief weakness that you have discovered or you have talked about in any scenario?
I'll give you one.
Okay.
My chief weakness is to be too self-sacrificing. So when I'm too self-sacrificing, then I find that part of me thinks that's maybe the best and nicest part of myself, so maybe I'll put myself out too much for others. And then when I do that to the point where it doesn't work for me, I don't, like some people get resentful about it, but I do end up maybe getting drained and being less effective in my life and less happy. And so it's a weakness because it's automatic and I get seduced by myself into doing it. And so part of waking up for me is to notice when I'm beginning to volunteer to allow myself to be drained, and then to try and bring more presence into that and more intention when I can. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Thank you for sharing that.
Mark Roche said, I can so relate to all that, Teresa.
Good. So the hunt, in a sense, the hunt for one's chief weakness is a takes a lot of skill and a lot of, you know, a lot of time and hunting prowess, so to speak.
Yeah.
I was feeling that if the exercise before was really, you have to be really creative to find out what is exactly what produces that thing on you. This one is a notch upper.
Yeah.
This is even harder.
I want to read one sentence, and that is, this is at the top of page 130, actually just into 138. The beginning of the second full paragraph, and it just says, the being, capitalized, the being is born among a sleeping people. Everything in the surroundings is part of the unconscious conspiracy of the great nature to keep us in sleep so that we will continue to fulfill our part in the cosmic necessity. By the time the machine has reached what would otherwise have been a responsible age, responsible in the real sense of the word, we have developed very strong habits of sleep, and very intense efforts are necessary to awaken the machine. That is, if for us, it is still possible. So, it is still possible, because we're here.
Are you going to read any more, or would you like to stop for the evening? Where are we at here?
I think I'm kind of, because of the shortness of time, and I think that it would be worth our while to take some time with the material, and I'm kind of feeling that it might be good to be at a bit of a stopping point.
Okay, that's good. Ginger Rogers said yes, a lot to think about, and we're getting some thank yous. And I said, if you find yourself getting uncomfortable with your exploration, you might be getting close to the chief weakness. And guess we're ready to end for the evening. So thank you for coming. Wonderful participation on everybody's part. And we will reconvene next week.
Thanks for coming. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
Thank
Good
you.
Night.